From Cap Radio in Sacramento, this is Insight. I'm your host, Vicky Gonzalez. Since Governor Gavin Newsom first took office, the state has made homelessness a top priority and backed it up with unprecedented funding. A go-to solution to transition people into permanent housing are emergency shelters. Since 2018, the state has spent roughly $1 billion on homeless shelters, more than doubling the number of emergency beds in the state from 27,000 to 61,000. Yet fewer than one in four people actually move into permanent housing. And a new investigation by the nonprofit newsroom CalMatters has uncovered scandal and abuse in many of the state's shelters for unhoused residents. The problems are widespread across the state and can even result in death. Lauren Hupler is an investigative reporter for CalMatters, which partners with public media stations across the state, and joins us today to explain what's going on inside some of these facilities. Welcome.
Thanks for having me.
So why did you decide to look into this story?
Well, that's what I was going to say. It really goes back kind of years and years. I've covered homelessness in California since about 2012. And going around and interviewing folks at encampments, living in their cars, you often ask the question, like, why aren't you in a shelter? You know, we grow up knowing about places like the Salvation Army, where you think you can go have a bunk bed, at least get some food. And, you know, for years, I've heard horror stories about those places. One man in Oakland told me I felt like I was treated like a dirty animal. A woman in Los Angeles recounted being raped in one of these facilities. So I had heard anecdotes like that. But we said, you know, how widespread is this? What do the records actually show? Especially now, because I think, you know, you can talk to folks across the state and we're really kind of at a breaking point. Homelessness continues to rise. We've got 187,000 unhoused residents in the state, which is a record. And the Supreme Court last year said cities can go ahead and get stricter and cracking down on sleeping outside. So all of those factors together, it seemed like a really good time to look at, well, what are some of these supposed solutions delivering?
I mean, you lead with a pretty bold fact that your investigation found that these shelters are deadlier than jails. I mean, you shared a couple of these anecdotes. What did you learn about the safety or lack thereof that's happening inside these shelters for residents?
Yeah, so to get at that, last January, so a little over a year ago, we started filing requests with every county in the state, as well as several state agencies, for police call logs, internal incident reports about what's happening in shelters. And then we also interviewed more than 80 shelter residents and people who work in or run shelters, which was important to this. And yeah, as you say, there were some pretty jarring findings. We found that annual shelter death rates tripled between 2018 and mid-2024. A total of more than 2,000 people died. Like you said, that's nearly twice as many deaths as California jails saw during that same period. And unfortunately, there were many other instances of abuse as well.
When you're talking to people who either work at these shelters, law enforcement, residents themselves, about the some 2,000 deaths in a very short period of time, what did you learn about some of the main factors that are contributing to this?
We have some of the coroner's records, but not all, and it shows an array of causes. You know, this time period we looked at, 2018 to 2024, that includes the pandemic. So there were some deaths linked to respiratory illness, also chronic health conditions, either things related to your heart or your lungs. Obviously, if you're living outside or unhoused, that's very hard on your body. The life expectancy is shorter. And then there were factors like the drug crisis that also intensified during this period. You see a lot of overdoses and deaths, like suicides, and then occasional flashes of violence.
What safety measures exist inside an emergency shelter? Is it easy to explain that generally, or does it vary from one facility to the next?
There is variation, but one thing we've tracked is a boom in private security contracts at these facilities as well. So often you'll hear folks talk about how they're searched upon entry. There's actually been lawsuits about sexual harassment during some of those searches, but there are screening processes like that in place in a lot of facilities. The problem, though, is that the oversight is very fragmented. So the local agencies, either the city or the county, a lot of times are supposed to be the ones keeping an eye on these facilities. But as we found through all these police calls and incident reports, there's still a whole lot of stuff happening inside these places that are often sort of barred from public access.
If something happens and a resident wants to report it, how does that work?
So usually folks that I've interviewed go to the shelter operator directly, and they report very mixed results with that. Sometimes folks have said, I know my complaint got thrown away. I never heard about it again. Some folks do get follow-up, or they go a level above that. They'll go to the city or the county agency that's funding. And in some cases, people are very persistent. They'll try to go to the state, go to elected representatives. But again, the issue is that the follow-through is really spotty, and audits show this too, sort of a lack of follow-through when there are issues observed inside shelters. So that's one of the things that I think really came out here.
When you take this investigation to people in positions of power, whether local or state leaders, what do they say?
It is important to note that Governor Gavin Newsom declined to comment on our findings. He referred all questions to other state agencies. The California Interagency Council on Homelessness acknowledged the gravity of misconduct allegations for things like we documented stabbings, black mold, child abuse, a wide variety of things. But they said, shelters still serve this important short-term solution. They emphasize that it's not the be-all end-all for homelessness. There are a couple interesting state bills that have been proposed that would add more oversight potentially. So add some teeth to a law that requires cities and counties to report on shelter conditions and to potentially track the finances a little closer.
Given that these facilities can be done by private contractors, I mean, there's money at stake here. Is there some oversight as to whether there are bad actors at a facility that that contractor can't receive any more funding, or there's some type of punishment for that?
Yeah, again, that's fragmented. So we found instances like a shelter in Salinas where tons and tons of internal emails document complaints about the staff at a brand new shelter stealing the best donations for themselves, helping friends and family jump the line for housing. In Los Angeles, we had court records that showed a nonprofit hired a man who was convicted of attempted murder to work security at the shelter. But he then went on to commit three sex crimes in one day against women living at the shelter. And in both of those cases, those had never been made public. We found those through records requests. There are sometimes confidential court settlement agreements or audits that we're told are privileged and confidential, and we're not allowed to see them. So I would say generally, yes, there is a lack of sunshine on things like this. You will see cities and counties, like at their council meetings or board of supervisors, review these contracts from time to time, but often they're focused on just, how much is this going to cost? And maybe sometimes they'll talk about how many people are getting housed, but it's not a thorough conversation.
When talking about the number of deaths that have taken place at emergency shelters in the last 6 years or so, is this kind of isolated to certain parts of the state, or is this widespread?
That was one of the striking findings. We really did find incidents across the state. So I mentioned these sort of mismanagement scandals in Salinas and Los Angeles. We had other records that showed stabbings in places like Silicon Valley, a child abuse case out in Fresno, as issues with black mold or bed bugs everywhere from Oakland to Orange County. So it was a wide variety of big cities, suburbs, rural areas. And I think that really kind of mirrors just the state's overall struggle with homelessness. For a long time, shelters were sort of like a big city thing. We had them in San Francisco, Sacramento, LA. But now you're seeing these shelters open up in suburbs, these publicly funded shelters. So suburban areas, and then, yes, even rural areas where there just aren't a lot of other resources. And the question is, as that growth happens, are people keeping an eye on these conditions and ultimately whether they're helping with the housing crisis?
And there's a business attached to it.
Yeah, definitely. So this is an interesting one because the state could not give us a complete estimate for how much money has been spent on these facilities since 2018. So we went ahead and analyzed contracts and state funding data on our own and can say that at least $1 billion has been spent on shelters since 2018. That's in the context of about $27 billion total spent on homelessness. And, you know, audits have documented that a lot of that money is not well tracked. So that appears to be the case here as well. Again, there's a state measure proposed to kind of change how some of that works. But yes, you'll see nonprofit shelter operators where their revenue has grown $100 million, $50 million in the last 5 or 10 years.
You're listening to Insight here on CAP Radio. And if you're just joining us, we're talking with CalMatters investigative reporter Lauren Hepler about an investigation into California's taxpayer-funded homeless shelters. You mentioned a lot of this stuff is not available to the public. What were the main challenges in this investigation to bring this to light and to access that information?
It was really just trying to probe for documents that are not usually made available to the public, because you can't just walk up to a shelter and say, let me in. Like, I can tell you from experience, they will not let you just walk in. And they make sense, right? There's privacy concerns. Folks, like their families or friends or employers, might not know that they're staying at a shelter. So that makes sense. But residents say they get a little concerned when it's like no one can get in and they're told not to take photos or take video. It becomes this kind of lack of transparency that folks are concerned about. So the way we got at that was really trying to request these detailed records. So internal emails about shelter complaints and photos of the conditions like bed bugs and mold and things like that. And then these incident reports that kind of detail, you know, what kind of violence happened, how it was handled, whether the police were called. And it was really just trying to go through methodically in that way.
Another big piece of this is getting people into permanent housing. Emergency shelters have emergency in the name. They're meant to be transitional. But you found that the vast majority don't actually end up getting into permanent housing. I think 1 in 4 actually end up getting a permanent home. What did you learn about the reasons why?
Yeah, so the most favorable way you can calculate it, this is disputed, is that about 22% of residents have moved from shelters to permanent housing from 2018 to 2024, and that actually excludes people who are still living in shelters. If you factor in the people who are kind of stuck in these shelters, that can become like a purgatory. We talk to people who are living in them for years in some instances. If you factor them in, it's really only about 10% of people that are moving on to permanent housing. So again, that's an area kind of like with the finances where some more certainty, some standards around how to even calculate the housing rates could be helpful for everyone to know, like how well these places are working or not. But there are a ton of factors that go into this. And the first really important one is that this is an extremely difficult job, and I don't want to take that lightly. Even really harsh shelter critics said to me, you know, these places house elderly and very sick people that would quite literally die if they were left outside to fend for themselves. So that's another reason why the answer is not to just be like, defund them, close the shelters. It's like, we need them in some form, but we need to make sure that they're working. And one thing that really came out of that was a challenge now is that a lot of shelters are kind of one size fits all. So you've got people with really intense mental health, maybe addiction issues, housed alongside people that, you know, are maybe just trying to get back on their feet after a domestic violence situation or a unexpected layoff, medical debt. So people are in very different conditions, and kind of just throwing everyone together is often a recipe for chaos.
Yeah, when I have talked to people who are living at shelters, you know, some have told me privately after interviewing them that, you know, they felt unsafe, you know, because you're in these congregate settings. And a lot of them, particularly in my experience, have been women feeling unsafe in these congregate settings. Homelessness, I know California is home to the largest unhoused population in the country, but it doesn't just exist in California. Is this a problem unique to California? Did you get a better gauge of if the shelter experience is also happening elsewhere?
This is a national issue. I talked to some experts on the East Coast. There's actually a sociologist at the University of Pennsylvania, Dennis Colhane, who was living undercover in shelters several decades ago and said he was tracking a lot of these same issues. So what really emerges is that this is a little bit of like an open secret. It's like we know that these facilities kind of get dumped on, like all of society's issues get dumped into a homeless shelter. And for years and years, we've kind of chosen to not really deal with how messy that daily reality is. And I think the question is now, like, are we reaching a breaking point where we need to look at other potential alternatives? So like I said, one option is maybe looking at more specialized facilities for people with different needs to try to really make a go at rehabilitation, getting people back on their feet. Obviously, housing is just the huge elephant in the room. There's not enough places for people to go, especially if you've got evictions or bankruptcies or other financial issues on your record. And then there are people who say, you know, let's look at other models. They say there's this bigger kind of experiment happening with rent assistance and basic income, where it's, do you just give people direct cash to try to keep them stabilized and at least, you know, try to turn off the spigot of people that just continue to fall into homelessness at these overwhelmed facilities?
As we wind this conversation down, just a few days ago, Governor Newsom announced a new tool to measure local progress in tackling homelessness. Do you think this will help, having a tool like this? Will it be effective?
I think it really highlights a big tension here that a lot of people I spoke with talked about, which is that no one wants to really be on the hook for putting the pieces together on homelessness. The governor repeatedly kind of turns the focus to, well, the local governments aren't doing enough to track this. And as I said, there's definitely things you could be tracking much better. But I do think it's fair when local officials counter that the state is constantly changing the rules for them. They're dealing with neighbors who don't want any of these things in their neighborhoods. So, you know, what we're seeing in the meantime is that these problems keep being outsourced to nonprofits that have vastly different resources, staffing to be able to meet the need. And it's just, unfortunately, in this case, a recipe for kind of a self-defeating cycle that we're in on homelessness.
Lauren, thanks for joining us.
Thanks.
Lauren Hepler is an investigative reporter for the nonprofit newsroom CalMatters, and we've been talking about her new investigation, which found misconduct and abuse within California's taxpayer-funded homeless shelters. Up next, Democrats may have a supermajority in state government, but California Republicans are seeing their caucus grow and shift. I'll sit down with GOP minority leaders Brian Jones and James Gallagher about their priorities. You're listening to Insight on Cap Radio, where facts matter and stories inspire. I'm Vicki Gonzalez.